I respect everything that the president has said, and certainly respect his faith. I think it's important, and I share it. I think that he just said that freedom is a gift from the Almighty. Everything is a gift from the Almighty. And as I measure the words of the Bible, and we all do, different people measure different things. The Quran, the Torah, or, you know, Native Americans who gave me a blessing the other day had their own special sense of connectedness to a higher being. And people all find their ways to express it. I was taught, I went to a church school, and I was taught that the two greatest commandments are love the Lord your God with all your mind, your body, and your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And frankly, I think we have a lot more loving of our neighbor to do in this country and on this planet. We have a separate and unequal school system in the United States of America. There's one for the people who have, and there's one for the people who don't have. And we're struggling with that today. The president and I have a difference of opinion about how we live out our sense of our faith. I talked about it earlier when I talked about the works and faith without works being dead. I think we've got a lot more work to do. And as president, I will always respect everybody's right to practice religion as they choose or not to practice, because that's part of America.
That, of course, is Senator John Kerry. That was audio from the last presidential debate. Bob Schieffer had asked both the president and Senator Kerry about the role of faith in their policy decisions, and that was his entire response. It's open lines, issues, etc. I've got a question for you. Earlier, maybe about a month ago, we had the opportunity to talk with Tim Gagelin, who is a special liaison to the president for religious affairs at the White House. We did an interview with him. You heard it. We did a little open lines on it. Well, when we did that interview, some people wrote in saying, look, where's the Kerry side of this? Are you going to talk to someone from the Kerry campaign? We said, well, of course we are. Well, this weekend, either Sunday or perhaps Monday morning, we're going to have the opportunity to do an interview, about 15 minutes, with a representative of the Religious Outreach Department of the Kerry campaign. And we need to know what questions to ask. And I want your input on this. What is the must-ask question when we talk about faith and politics? What should I ask during this interview? It's open lines, issues, etc. Time for your input, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We are coming to you live this Friday. It's October the 29th. That's a little rare here on Issues, etc. to have a live Friday program, but we do. And my question for you during this live hour of open lines: what should I ask the representative of the Religious Outreach Department of the Kerry campaign when it comes to faith and politics? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Or look at it this way. If you hear the entire interview and Wilkin doesn't ask this question, your question, the question that you would be disappointed, say, oh, Wilkin blew it. He didn't ask the right question. What is that question? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We asked some questions of Tim Gagelin, who's that special liaison to the president for religious affairs. He's the guy who goes out and does the religious outreach for not only the Bush campaign, but also for the White House. We asked questions like, well, the president has been accused of being a puppet of the religious right, and get his response to that. What kind of question, as a counterpart, should we ask the representative of Senator Kerry? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. As I mentioned, we talk with Tim Gagelin, and perhaps to spur a little conversation here, and perhaps to refresh our own memory in advance of that conversation that we're going to be having Sunday or Monday with the representative of the Religious Outreach Department of the Kerry campaign, one day before the election. Let's hear again that interview that we did with Tim Gagelin, special liaison to the president.
Well, you know, every day is a typically atypical day. There are no two that are the same. And it's tempting to say that the structure is pretty much the same each day, but even that's not the case. Some days you seem to have a series of meetings where you're planning for a number of things with the president or with the cabinet or the senior staff at the White House. There are other days when you have to be traveling either with the president or by yourself speaking or meeting or doing other things out in the country. And then there are other days which I'm sure are very similar to the work days of most Americans. You come in and And very early, you maybe have a working breakfast or lunch. You may have a number of teleconferences or planning or scheduling meetings. But above all, the one thing that ties together every day is that you are really at the service of the President of the United States, that it's the job of the Office of Public Liaison, where I work, to get the President's message out. We can't lobby by federal law, but it's very important that each and every day we communicate and we educate to different coalitions and constituencies in America what the President's agenda is, why he believes what he believes, and what he intends to do. And also, equally, and perhaps more importantly, very important to listen to people, and I promise I do my best to be a good listener, but to make sure that we are reflecting back into the White House bloodstream at the very highest levels what the views are of real Americans, where they really live and work. And I love people. I love the intersection of policy and communication, it's a wonderful way to serve Christ and a wonderful way to serve the President.
You are quoted in a Newsweek piece recently. You say, this President would be only half understood if he were not seen as a man of faith. What do you mean?
This President is Commander-in-Chief. He is the most powerful man in the country and in the world. And his constitutional obligation, above all, is to protect and to defend the Constitution of the United States of America, and to be our Commander-in-Chief. And yet, the things that you can't state in constitutions, both the written kind in America and the unwritten kind in places like Great Britain and others, is what sorts of men we bring to office. And one of the wonderful things about the very short and young history of this great republic is that we have often brought to the Oval Office by election men of great faith and fortitude in that regard. And George W. Bush does not see himself as pastor-in-chief or sermonizer-in-chief, but he does realize that he does have to and must rely on God to be alive and at work in the affairs of men and women in this country. The President is a praying president. He's a president who likes to study and to read the Bible. He's in prayer. He's a great man of faith, as are both of the Bushes. And he believes very strongly that he has been put at the White House in this time in history for an important purpose, and he sees himself on a mission. And this president is very cognizant of time, and he's very cognizant of making a contribution that will last. And I think that there are many people who see the President's faith, and they like that very much. They may dislike his policies. They may disagree with him, even if they strongly support him on some issues. But they see his faith. And I've had a chance to see the President and to work with him at close range for 5 years. And I have seen a man who, as a Christian, sees it as part of his faith to be a good steward of his time and of the resources with which he has been given.
So, Tim, some fear that President Bush is a puppet of the religious right. How would you respond to that?
I would say a couple of things. The first is that the President, above all things, is a man who is very comfortable in his own skin. He is a man who knows his mind very well. He's a man who knows how to set achievable priorities, large though they be. And he is a man who is not intimidated by cheap criticism. He is a president who is very comfortable engaging with people who disagree and even strongly disagree with him. And when people, you know, list the merits of the disagreements, this is a president who listens and who welcomes that disagreement. And that, I think, is a very healthy thing. But to suggest that he is anybody less than his own man with these very strong convictions, I think, is a fundamental misreading of who George W. Bush is.
George Bush has asked the question, does the Democratic Party take African-American voters for granted? Well, here is my answer. The book of Matthew reminds us, beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing.
That was Senator John Kerry, Tim, at a meeting of the National Baptist Convention USA last week in New Orleans. Tim, where is the outrage from the left when Kerry waxes religious and quotes scripture?
Well, let me just say, unfortunately, John Kerry felt it was important to go into a church and to use the Holy Scripture against the president. And, you know, it's tempting after hearing a comment like that for, you know, me to state for the listeners, you know, the two or three things that are either acceptable or unacceptable about what he just said. But I think sometimes, as Winston Churchill learned, sometimes it's better to speak, and sometimes it's better to let your opponent's words work against him. The more outlandish the statement, the more ridiculous the statement, sometimes it's better that you just let his person and his words hang out there and then let people decide. But I would just say that I think to use God's holy word as a weapon is probably not a good thing.
Is the administration's support for the state of Israel based in any way on the president's religious beliefs?
You know, I can say categorically that the president's strong support for Israel, the president's strong belief about the fundamental need for transition in the Middle East generally, is not a result of a close reading of the Bible. It's a result of a very strong conviction about what is best for the national security of the United States of America and what is best for our allies abroad. Just since coming to office, we have seen, through George W. Bush's policies, the most remarkable transition in the Middle East in 25 years. In Iraq, Saddam Hussein is gone and never to return. The Taliban, about two-thirds of which is smashed, continues to be a reduced and reducing influence, and good for that. Al-Qaeda is a vibrant opponent and enemy, but the United States and our allies are doing everything we can to crush Al-Qaeda. Iran has a remarkable reformist movement that is not going away. General Musharraf in Pakistan has become an ally in the war on terror, and for the first time, Pakistan and India, two nuclear-tipped powers, are actually sitting down at a conference table to have serious discussions about the fate of Kashmir. We have seen a real transition of American military power out of Saudi Arabia and into Qatar in a way that has been seamless and very good for American foreign policy. In Afghanistan, we are going to have the first presidential election ever in October, and Mr. Karzai remains a solid pro-American head of state. And I could go on and on. These are remarkable achievements. They are a result of George W. Bush's vision for the Middle East. And we are going to see better things ahead. We believe that we will see not only democratic elections in Iraq, but we will see finally a democracy in Iraq. I mean, who would have ever thought that 10 million Iraqis, 10 million, would have registered to vote? But that is an incredible achievement, and it is because of the success of the president's policy and the incredible work that our military men and women are doing there. And in Israel, we now have the greatest movement ever with regard to Gaza and the West Bank. It's being done by a conservative prime minister, and we have in George W. Bush, the first president, to say that we can have a sovereign and independent Palestinian state living next to a sovereign and independent Israel. And that is real achievement.
We're talking with Tim Gagelein about faith and presidential politics. He's special assistant to President George W. Bush and director of the Office of Public Liaison at the White House. Tim, here's President Bush at a news conference last year in London.
Mr. President, when you talk about peace in the Middle East, you've often said that freedom is granted by the Almighty. Some people who share your beliefs don't believe that Muslims worship the same Almighty. I wondered about your views on that.
I do say that freedom is the Almighty's gift to every person. I also condition it by saying freedom is not America's gift to the world. It's much greater than that, of course. And I believe we worship the same God.
Tim, why did he say this, I believe we worship the same God?
Let me just say, I think, and I'm actually very glad that you ran the reporter's question, because that really does put it in context. People know that George W. Bush is a Christian, and they know that he is not a theologian. And they know that it's not the job of the president to stand before the World Press Corps and begin to make distinctions between the great three monotheistic religions of Judaism and Islam and Christianity. The president has made it very clear that as a Christian, he believes in a triune God. And the president certainly understands the distinctions among and between Islam, Judaism, and Christianity.
The face of terror is not the true faith of Islam. That's not what Islam is all about. Islam is peace.
That was President Bush at the Islamic Center of Washington, D.C. in 2001, Tim. That was less than a week after September 11th. Could the Bush administration be underestimating the religious ingredient in Islamic terrorism?
I think that history will prove and show that George W. Bush, among all of his leadership gifts and abilities, was able very early on to distinguish that this was not going to be a war among or between Christianity, Islam, and Judaism. And the president wanted to do everything he could to distinguish, and he has done this consistently since 9/11, to distinguish what is in some parts of the world seen as a religious war over against a war of fanatics who have misapplied and misinterpreted a particular religion and have used it against not only America, but now Spain and Russia and Indonesia and many others. And I think that the president's view is confirmed in the fact that much of the worst terrorism we have seen has been by some Muslims against other Muslims. We just recently saw it, as I say, in Indonesia, which by percentages has the highest Muslim population in the world. We saw it as recently as this week with the terrible killing of Muslims against Muslims in Iraq. Most of the death and destruction that we have seen in Iraq is by these same zealots against their own countrymen who not only want to support a democracy, but want to work in the security forces of the new Iraq. I think that George W. Bush has been enormously responsible about making that distinction, and it's what a president needs and should do.
Some are concerned that the president himself and his administration has been misled by neoconservatives, usually typified big government, pro-Israel, Rockefeller Republicans. Is this true?
You know, let me just say categorically it's untrue, and let me say as well that this has been a kind of a battering ram that that pops up by people who tend to be in the hard left and people who tend to be self-styled conservatives who in fact are really not conservatives at all. Very recently, Pat Buchanan appeared on Meet the Press, and I think that his bona fides are pretty strong. And when he began to use this kind of language, you realize that it's really perfectly destructive. The influence of conservatives without prefixes has been strong in this administration because George W. Bush is a strong conservative, and the policies that have emanated from the Oval Office are conservative because the president is one. But to suggest that we got into a war in Afghanistan or in Iraq because a neoconservative said we should is on its face, prima facie, nothing short of ridiculous.
Now, that was the substance of our interview last month with Tim Gaglon, a special liaison to the president, especially on religious affairs. We're going to have an interview with his counterpart in the Kerry campaign this weekend, Sunday night or Monday morning. And we're going to try and bring that to you on the air. But before that, I want to know, what questions should we be asking? This is your opportunity to play producer. My producer sits there and mulls over important questions in advance of interviews, and we put them together. This is your opportunity to play producer for us. And I want to know that we don't leave anything out, that we don't have any blind spots going into that important interview with the Kerry campaign one day before the election. It's open lines. I want your answer to that question. What question should I ask the Kerry campaign right before the election on the issue of faith and politics? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines for the last half hour of Issues Etc., and we're coming to you live this Friday, the 29th of October. The last 25 minutes is open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You heard the interview with the Bush campaign or the Bush White House? We're going to do that Kerry campaign interview. I want to know, what should I ask? Open lines is next. Stay tuned.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
All right, this is a big special moment. This is it. This is our last Rally Day break for these 2 days, and we are in a kind of a celebrative mood here. We're up to 25 day sponsors. Thank you so much, all you people who called in and helped us out. We had our Thrivent matches. We've been telling you all about that. So we're looking at a very successful Rally Day, Thursday and Friday. And we have just a few more minutes to go over some of the things that we still have on the rally block here. Just a few more minutes, and then we're going to be done, and we need to hear from you. Numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Go, Joni.
Okay, we still have a John Pills print in Concordia Publishing House package, which is a lovely print of Lutheran churches in the St. Louis area, as well as a number of books, including Take Eat, Take Drink, The Lord's Supper, Through the Centuries, The Lord Will Answer, A Daily Prayer Catechism, Martin Luther, A Man Who Changed the World, Meditations on Divine Mercy, Peek and Find Christmas Story, Knock Knock, Who's There Christmas, and Born in Bethlehem. That's Rally Day package number 9. We also have all three packages still available. That Issues Etc. was offering different tape packages. Please feel free to call in and ask about those. We have a bicycle ride for two, which is a one-day bike rental with all the accessories, as well as a $50 gift certificate to Cafe Brazil. We have the Christmas Extravaganza, two tickets to the Christmas Candlelight Concert, a $50 gift certificate to the Crossings Restaurant. I know.
Somebody needs to jump on that.
That's a nice,
that's a tough ticket
one
to get.
Another one, two men's sports package, two gift certificates for 18 holes of golf, plus a cart at Wren Lake, four tickets to men's Billiken basketball game, and a $30 gift certificate to Naruto Restaurant in Edwardsville, Illinois.
Which I can personally testify.
I know, you said it was great.
Outstanding restaurant.
We've still got the one available, the Paul Taylor Dance Company, one night stay at Holiday Inn, two orchestra level tickets for November 5th or 6th, and a $20 gift certificate to Pietro's. We have a number of other ones available also. You can still call us, call in. If you haven't heard one that you had heard earlier and you think you're interested, call in and ask about it. We'd certainly appreciate your support.
Pastor Baker, can you make some law and gospel distinctions on some of these packages?
Oh, especially the Concordia Publishing House one. That's the easiest one. Because it ought to be said, some of them are children's books.
Yep.
So if you have some children, package number 9 would be perfect for you, particularly with Knock Knock, Who's There at Christmas, and Born in Bethlehem with Amazing Bible Facts. And the Martin Luther, A Man Who Changed the World, is the, I believe, the most recent book by Paul Meyer, who was recently interviewed on Issues Etc.
Yep.
Yesterday.
Yep. All right, let's say thank you to some folks here.
Okay, we've got Mark and Pauline Dow. They are celebrating on June 25th their wedding anniversary. They became a day sponsor. Also, Pastor Tom Baker, the Concordia Mission Society, March 3rd, 2005. We thank you for your support, Pastor Baker. And Tom Couts, I hope I'm saying that right, August 3rd for a wedding anniversary. We also have Bill and Nancy Mahler of St. Louis, Missouri. All have become day sponsors, and we thank you for your support.
Did you ring the bell for all those people?
Wait a minute. Randy Powers of Warrenton, Missouri also. Okay, we got...
My goodness.
Six. Hey, we could keep doing that too, you know, so keep calling us. We're going to be here probably until about 5:45.
Can you come over to my house and do that in the morning and get me out of bed? That's pretty good. I like that. All right, just a few more minutes remaining here. 505-780-1800-730-2727. If there's something in there, you were going to be a day sponsor in 2005 anyway. Why not call up now, sign up now, and then claim one of these wonderful packages that are left. 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Cheryl and Sandy have graciously agreed to stay around a little bit here after we go off the air here on our last Rally Day break. So you can call in and claim any one of those things that Joni just described.
That's correct. And as we said, there's a few more. And if you have a computer, go on up on the Internet to www.kfuo.org. And you can also look at some of the packages and see if they're still available. Even as we speak, we have another one that came in, Roland Schulenberg. Thank you.
Oh, Roland. Roland is KFUO man. He was born the same day that KFUO went on the air.
Yes, he is a faithful supporter to AM850 KFUO.
So we know how old you are this year, Roland.
That's right.
But we're not going to say. But we know how old you are.
Call us at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727.
Some of the folks who are calling in, if you're, you know, maybe you're sitting there thinking, well, it's the end of Rally Day. This was kind of fun listening to these people. Having fun at the radio station. If you're a first-time day sponsor, if you've never been a day sponsor before and this is your first time, make sure you ask for the shirt. I think we have shirts left, don't we?
We still have shirts left.
We have shirts left. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful shirt. You can wear it during the winter time. It's long sleeve, so it'll be right in fashion for the coming fall and winter months. And it has the KFUO logo prominently on the front there. I can't tell you how many people have told me. They like to tell you this. I was wearing my KFUO shirt in the grocery store, and somebody came up to me and said, oh, I listen to KFUO. Do you listen to KFUO? And a conversation starts in some of the strangest places. And this is a kind of a sky blue embroidery on top of that cranberry colored shirt, so it's very visible. And it's a conversation starter, and who knows, next thing maybe you'd be talking about the Bible and things of the faith.
And if it's somebody, might be somebody who's never listened to KFUO, and you'll have an opportunity to let them know that KFUO is on the air and they can listen to us.
Well, this is our last minute here of our Day 2 Rally Day. Thank you so much to those of you who stepped up and said, yes, I will sign up and I will support the ministry of KFUO. Thank you so much to the Thrivent chapters. We've identified them several times. Again, the good people at Thrivent with over $5,000 in support money here for our Rally Day. And we're very happy. We're thrilled with the way this has gone. And it would be just even better if a few folks would call up here after we go off the air here in this last rally break.
Looks like the lights are still coming on the telephones. Thank you also to Sandy and Cheryl, who have been in the background taking your phone calls and helping you select a day for your special day. We really appreciate the help.
Now, Pastor Baker, when we go off the air here, don't leave, because you got a program to do at 6 o'clock.
Yes.
505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Give us a call and be a day sponsor.
Historical theology is not just a bunch of names and dates and fact. It's the study of Christ being faithful to his promises.
Dr. Larry Rast of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the importance of historical theology.
Historical theology is the study of theology over the course of time, just like the title says, theology over the course of time. But that can lead some to think that this is a dry, kind of an abstract endeavor, when in fact what we're talking about with historical theology is the faithful confession ongoing through the church by people that Christ has called, seeing him fulfill the promise that he will never leave the church orphaned or forsaken.
For more information about Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit their website, www.ctsfw.edu. Monday on Issues Etc. Next Tuesday's election. What else will we be talking about on Monday? We'll be talking with Issues Etc. political science expert Dr. Jeff Waltz from Concordia University Mequon. We'll also talk with both Illinois and Missouri Right to Life. Father Richard Newhouse, this is a rare opportunity to talk with this man of tremendous intellect and experience. We'll be talking to him about the influence of the Roman Catholics on this election. That's Monday on Issues Etc. We'll also be discussing the feminist case against abortion with Saren Foster of Feminists for Life. It's open lines for the last 25 minutes of the program. We're coming to you live this Friday, the 29th of October. The question I've laid on the table for you, what question should I ask when this weekend I have an opportunity to record an interview with the representative of the Religious Outreach Department of Kerry's campaign? Well, that interview is going to be about faith and politics. They're anxious to do the interview with us. What question should I ask? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's start with Steve, who's calling from his car. Steve, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Pastor Wilkin.
Hi, Steve.
I would have several questions for him, but I think the chief among them would be, and you would obviously feel free to reword this if I'm not as clear as I should be, but I would like to ask why he feels free to impose his religious beliefs and the beliefs that he sees from Scripture as far as enforcing charity and helping the poor and extracting tax dollars by force from the people for redistribution in terms of helping the poor, but he doesn't feel as free to enforce the other admonitions such as thou shalt not kill with regard to embryonic stem cell research and his abortion policy.
That's a good question. You got any others on your mind, Steve?
Yeah, I think just in general, I think with both, and this would somewhat apply to both President Bush and to Senator Terry, is I think there's a real blurring of the distinction between biblical admonitions for individuals and for families and admonitions towards civil government. When he uses things like, when he talks about we need to love more and where are the works and so forth, well, those are all things that we are admonished to do as individual believers, not as a government.
So kind of the whole question of how he uses Scripture to talk about public policy. Very good questions. Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate you being first during open lines. What about the rest of you? Call now. The phone lines are wide open, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Vern is on the line calling from St. Louis. Vern, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks for taking my call. My question kind of piggybacks on what the gentleman just talked about in terms of the abortion life issue. In the segment of the debate that you played earlier, Senator Kerry was quoted as saying, faith without works is dead. It would seem to me that if the works don't match the faith, then there's either not genuine faith or maybe hypocritical or something like that. And if he says that, you know, I believe that abortion is wrong, but I don't want to legislate that for someone else. It seems to me that the works that he's performing as a senator aren't matching his faith.
His faith by his own admission. Yes, Vern. Thank you,
exactly.
Vern.
Exactly.
Thank you, Vern. All right. Now, this is the question. If you're just tuning in, we're going to be interviewing a representative of the Religious Outreach Department of the Kerry campaign, and that interview will take place sometime this weekend. I want to know from you, what question must I ask? If you listen to that interview and I don't ask it and you're disappointed, what was the question I left out? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Mary's up next, calling from her car. Hi, Mary.
Hey there, Todd. My specific question would be about why he did not sign the ban on partial birth abortion, and how could that possibly be acceptable?
Why he didn't vote for the ban on partial birth abortion?
Correct.
All right.
From my understanding, he is of the mind of not ban partial birth abortion, which to me is murder, you know, and so that's what my major question would be. to him on that.
Okay, now you are aware of the fact that in one of the debates, that question came up in a sidelong way, and his response was he would have signed it, but it had no exception for the life and health of the mother, and it made him thereby unacceptable for his signature. And that's how he said, well, look, I'm against partial birth abortion, but any bill that's going to touch upon Roe has got to have that exception for the life and the health of the mother.
Okay, I guess I do remember that, but it's still, to me, that's unacceptable because it's a full form baby. I mean, I'm sure everybody knows a premature baby born in 7 months that survived and is healthy today. And, you know, you just cannot justify murder because somebody's having a hard time.
Okay, I see what you're saying then. Then, in other words, you're saying, look, given the nature of partial birth abortion, given the nature of that, how could you not vote to ban it? That is a good question. If we know what it is, just the sheer horror of the thing, how could you not vote to ban that, regardless of your ideas about health and other exceptions? 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Vivian is calling from St. Charles. Vivian, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes, Todd, thank you for your show. My question is also on that partial birth abortion ban. He voted 6 times against that. My question to him would be, okay, if that legislation wasn't acceptably worded, why wasn't he a sponsor of an acceptable one?
Now, that is a great question, Vivian. That is a marvelous question. Would you have ever thought of that, Jeff? I never would have thought of it. You guys are really helping us out here, Vivian. Thank you very much. Any others? Do you got any other brilliant questions up your sleeve?
No, not off the top of my head. I could get going, though, after a while.
Well, look, call us back because you're obviously doing some thinking there. Okay, now that, I want you to listen carefully what Vivian had to say. It's one thing to say, why didn't you vote to ban partial birth abortion? It's an entirely different thing to say, okay, fine, you didn't like the bills that were there. You're a senator. You have a staff. You can craft legislation. If you don't think the bills that banned partial birth abortion were acceptable for various reasons, but you want it banned, why didn't you write one yourself? That is a great question. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, folks, don't call me after we broadcast this interview with the Kerry campaign on Monday. Don't call me and say, why didn't you ask this? Or you dropped the ball. Here's your opportunity right now. I get feedback from people whenever we, of course, in a presidential election cycle, you got to deal with the issues surrounding these things. All these issues that we deal with on a regular basis all come into play too during presidential election because they're issues. Abortion, embryonic stem cell research, the relationship of church and state, all these things that we talk about on a regular basis, regardless of whether or not we're electing a president. I catch heat all the time from listeners for how I deal with this on the air. Here's your opportunity to correct me. Here's your opportunity to see that I do my job the way you want to see it done, especially in this interview with the Kerry campaign. What should I ask them when we talk to them about faith and politics this weekend? And we record that interview for broadcast on Monday so you can hear it. You're not going to be there for the interview Sunday night, okay? I'm asking for your advice now. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's not going to be a live interview. It's going to be pre-recorded, so I'll need to take your phone calls now if you want to advise me on what I should ask. Bill is calling from his car. Bill, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Well, thank you. Senator Kerry, you are very much against this outsourcing of everything, but two things kind of strike me. One, you supported and voted for every bill that enabled this outsourcing, NAFTA and what all those. So I find a little bit difficulty with that. But the other thing is you're proposing a very major outsourcing, but you haven't called it that, but certainly is. It's called buying pharmaceuticals, drugs, medication from Canada. That's a major outsourcing. So I'm kind of got to reconcile that.
All right, Bill, thank you very much. Now, that is a good question, I think, a very good question, I don't think it'll fit within the purview of our interview when we talk about faith and politics. That's our thing. And we could talk about the economy or outsourcing, but that's not the purview of this program. And while I think it is a good question, and I think it very well put, in fact, Bill, probably will not make the cut for the interview, but I appreciate your call anyway. Barbara is calling from St. Louis. Barbara, welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to find out if you could ask him or ask the representative why Mr. Carey is taking scripture out of context and then using it as a political argument.
Okay, let's play this out just a little bit, Barbara, okay? Why is he taking it out of context? The response would be he's not taking it out of context. He's quoting scripture there, and I think he's rightly applying it. Let's recraft the question. Let's get to the heart of the question here with this. How would you ask that where they couldn't simply dismiss it as, hey, he's not taking it out of context?
Okay.
Not so loaded is what I'm saying.
All right. The context of the scripture is talking to individuals. He's taking this and applying it to government, which is not at all the context being spoken about. And I wanted to find out why he was doing that. Did he not know the Bible well enough, or was he just twisting it for personal gain?
All right, Barbara, that's a better question. In other words, here is the original context. How is it that Senator Kerry applies this to government, or what the government ought to do? Love your neighbor as yourself is one that he likes to quote. Now, Jesus speaks this to individuals, and in particular, to his disciples. How does that apply to the government? Is the senator saying that it's the government's responsibility to love? He says we've got a lot more loving to do. What do you mean that is it the government's responsibility to love its citizens or love those who are poor? It's Open Lines Friday on Issues Etc. Our call-in number is 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. See, that always works better when you got a specific example. Thank you very much, Barbara. Joe is up next. He's calling from his car. Joe, welcome.
Hi. I'm on a car phone. I can't hear you that well, but my question goes back to the partial birth abortion again. I still can't understand how he defines health of the mother. When my children were born, the doctor, you know, at that stage, for the health of the mother, they got to get the child out quickly. And every doctor that I've talked to says, you know, for the health of the mother, you have to immediate C-section. I just don't understand where he's coming from with the health of the mother.
Joe, that's a brilliant question, too. And I'll tell you why. Because it's one thing to say, look, I need to have an exception in any legislation I sign vis-a-vis abortion that's going to have an exception for the health and life of the mother. It is a very legitimate question, and that's the one you pose, Joe. What do you mean by health of the mother? Tell me specifically. What circumstances are you envisioning there as a lawmaker when you say health and life of the mother? That is something that has gone undefined. In fact, I've said it several times here on the air that we have these kind of bills that having exceptions for the health and the life of the mother, and those two words, health and life, serve as loopholes through which you could drive a freight train. They're so broad. It's a good question. Can the senator define health, the health and the life of the mother, specifically? What circumstance? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I'm going to fire Jeff. I don't need Jeff anymore for these interviews because these are great questions from our listeners. I won't fire you, I promise. Mary's calling from her car. Mary, welcome.
Hi, Todd. Yeah, don't fire Jim. If he thinks we need so much more love, then why is he not making legislation against abortion? And why is he for using all the embryonic stem cells? And why isn't he making legislation against stopping that if we need to have more love? Isn't that love?
Well, you know, he might respond, Mary. He might say, look, I'm talking about loving those like Christopher Reeve. I'm talking about loving those like Michael J. Fox, these sufferers from Parkinson's and other debilitating diseases or circumstances, and it's a small price to pay for us to express our love to them. And I think that these embryos that are merely potential life and would never be born anyway would certainly want us to rather than throw them away, use them for some good purpose. That would be, I imagine, his response.
Yeah, I can see that.
Mary, thank you very much. Now, see, that raises several questions here, too. The whole issue of the use of scripture, but also how are we going to get if the government's job is to love our neighbor, what shape is that going to take? That is awfully ambiguous. When it says the government's function is to promote the general welfare, we can kind of get a picture of that, to ensure the blessings of posterity to us and to our and to our children, of the blessings of liberty. Yeah, we can have specific examples of that. Provide for the common defense. I picture tanks and soldiers. Love your neighbor. I'm sorry, what the heck does that mean? That's simply too broad. Let's define it. That's a good question, though. Will you define love, please? Define the kind of love you're talking about. And then, why not? Loving the neighbor who's in the womb. Diane is calling from her car. Diane, welcome.
Hi, Ted. Thanks for taking my call. I would like to ask Senator Kerry. He is always stating that. He is pro-life, but he doesn't think that it's right for him to legislate his morals on the rest of the world. Well, then when it comes to picking judges, why does he not pick a judge that's pro-life? Isn't he also then putting his morals on the rest of the world?
That's a very good question. Diane, thank you. Let me write that one down, because it has to do with the selection of judges. And that's one way that one's morals, a president's morals, are transferred into the fabric of the government by the judges he selects. I mean, if I'm a corrupt president with little morals and I decide I'm going to select corrupt judges, I'm transferring my moral template into the fabric of government, into an unelected and lifetime position in the Supreme Court. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, I'm not going to lay all my cards on the table here, but I've got a couple others I'll just toss out. Maybe they'll spark some thought here. I want to know also about, and I don't know if I'll ask this or not, we'll see if it makes the cut. I want to know about the senator's receiving endorsements from clergy in all of his visits to the churches. What is the senator's goal in occupying so many pulpits lately? I would like to be able to, if we can, through some audio bites, contrast the senator's position on religion and politics earlier with his views more lately on religion and politics, because I've detected a bit of a migration there. And I'd like to ask this question, too. And if this sparks some thought, give us a call. What would the senator do if he came to, say, St. Louis as president, and went to Mass at the cathedral, where the last time I checked, Raymond Burke is holding forth? What if the bishop refused to commune him? What would the senator do if he was refused communion according to the bishop's policy about refusing communion to pro-choice Roman Catholic lawmakers? It's a good hypothetical, I think. We've come to the end of another month here. By Sunday, October will be over. We'll be into November, and of course, all that November brings. This is my last live opportunity to tell you about our Issues Etc. book of the month for October. It's actually two books. The Renaissance and Reformation Movements. You know, all this stuff about faith and politics that we talk about leading up to a presidential election? All of this stuff was also of great currency in terms of conversation and debate at the time of the Reformation. In fact, one might argue that before the Reformation, church and state were fairly well one entity, united in one person or one office, the papacy, for all intents and purposes in Western Europe. But after the Reformation, all that changes. And after the Reformation, a distinction between church and state, between faith and politics, begins to take place. It's a salutary distinction, I believe. Now, it's only one of the things you can read about in this compendious two-volume set, The Renaissance and Reformation Movements. The books are $23.99 individually. It's a two-volume set. Or $40.99 together. You can have either of the books. Call 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. That's the number for Concordia Publishing House. Ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October. You can either buy the first volume, The Renaissance, or the second volume, The Reformation, at $23.99 a piece, or $40.99 together. You can also go into any of the locations that Concordia Publishing House has here in the St. Louis area, where they operate bookstores. One is here on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. Their new address, because the street name changed, is 801 Seminary Way. 801 Seminary Way. Follow the signs to the CPH bookstore. Ask for the Issues Etc. book of the month for October, or at 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. 3558 South Jefferson, the main bookstore location for Concordia Publishing House. When you call, when you write, you can also go to our website, issuesetc.org, and look under the What's New section. You'll find the book there, information on it, and a link to ordering the book. When you call, when you write, when you go in, mention Issues Etc. 1-800-325-3040, issuesetc.org. Sunday on Issues Etc., this is a must-hear conversation. Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine, who's a regular guest, is going to join us to talk about fundamentalism, evangelicalism, and Lutheranism. What's the danger of a sermon that is all hell, fire, and brimstone? Is that more dangerous than a sermon that doesn't mention sin, hell, fire, brimstone at all? As you might hear in many evangelical churches, Aaron Wolf will answer the question. From Chronicles Magazine, Sunday night from 10 to 11 on 91.5 FM here in St. Louis. Monday on the program, we're going to be talking about Roman Catholics and Tuesday's election with Father Richard John Newhouse. I can think of no one better to have on, and this is a rare opportunity to talk with him, so tune in then. Father Richard John Newhouse talking about Roman Catholics and their influence on the election, and we'll also be talking about the feminist case against abortion with Saren Foster of Feminists for Life. That's Monday on the program. We'll also have representatives of both Illinois Right to Life and Missouri Right to Life to talk about the issues that are facing us in this presidential election regarding the life issue. That's all coming up Monday on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for joining us for this special live broadcast of Issues Etc. on Friday, and thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.